with Bill Woods in his home here in Bakersfield. I just read in a book last night that he is called the granddaddy of Kern County country music. And so we'll find out a little bit about his own background. Okay, Bill, where were you born? And tell us a little bit about growing up and how you got started in music.
Well, Janet, getting back to the granddaddy, I don't know about...
Why did you call it granddaddy
yet? Well, that's all right. I'm really not a grandpa yet. But I did come to... Is this a mic right here?
Mm-hmm.
I did come to Kern County when I was fairly young. I believe it was 1940 or 1941. I came to Arvin from Longview, Texas.
You were born in Texas?
Mm-hmm. I was born in Denison, Texas, and that's 9 miles from Sherman where Buck was born, you know.
Oh.
There's Buck Owens and Eisenhower, you know, they're right close together there.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Eisenhower was born in Denison, too. And I came out, I was fairly young, and it was in the summer, and I got a job driving a truck, hauling wine grapes to the winery. And then I wasn't in music at that time. I'd been playing in church. My dad was a minister back in Texas. And so I finished the summer out there and at Arvin. And then we went to, we moved to Visalia, and I was playing, you know, off and on in church. I never had played professionally at that time, except a radio program in Longview, Texas. One time I ran off from home when I was about 14 and joined a band in Texas, and we didn't play dancers or anything. We played a radio show on KRRV in Longview, Texas. And then from Arvin, we moved to Visalia, and I went to work. My uncle was a carpenter, and they was building the new Sequoia Air Base out at Dianeuba out of Visalia. And incidentally, this has never been mentioned in any write-ups. And so it was still summertime, and I decided to that I wanted to be a carpenter. I tried just about a little bit of everything. Service stations, you know, and everything when I was back home. And so I helped build that Sequoia Air Base, and then I went back to school. I went back to Visalia High, and Woodlake is a little town about 14 miles, I believe it's southeast of Visalia, at the foot of the Sequoia Mountains. My dad got elected to pastor the church out there, so we moved out there, and I'd drive back and forth to high school every day, and I'd go in early, and I'd work in a cafe from about 4 or 5 in the morning till school time, and then after school I'd go down to a hotel, it's not there anymore, Johnson Hotel, and work in there running the elevator until about midnight. Then I'd drive back home again.
Wow.
Over and over and over, you know, so that kind of seized me for the hard road of the music business that followed later. And I don't believe there's any business in the world. I've done all kinds of work, slinging a sledge, running a jackhammer, boilermaker, and everything. But actually, there's no work as hard mentally as the music business, really, if you really get in there and work it, you know.
That's true. And I think the more success you attain, probably the more difficult it is to keep on top of things mentally.
That's right. It's awful hard, you know, like some of the guys here in Bakersfield that's on top right now, Buck and Merle. And, you know, they don't get there by just somebody kind of showing them the way, but they've got to get there on their own. They've got to, it's a lot of hard work. Hours and hours, and after they get on top, like you said, it's harder work than ever because you've got to be a little bit sharper than
people
the thousands.
Expect more.
They expect more, and you got to be a little sharper than your competition in order to stay there, because there's a lot of competition in the music business.
Yeah.
Anyway, I went back to school. It was Visalia High then. They've named it Sequoia High now. And this was back during the, I believe it was the Second World War. And I went from Visalia to Los Angeles, me and a couple of friends of mine, and was going to go to work in aircraft factory and like starve to death down there. So we made it back to Visalia, and I left and went up to Oakland in Richmond, California, where I went to work up there for Permanente Metals Corporation as a boilermaker helper. And boilermaker is, I guess there's a lot of people who don't know what that is, but you work with steel. You know, you bend plates, you do a little welding, you do ship fitting, layout, and everything. And I was pretty young then, and I got to be foreman night on the graveyard shift. And I worked that for quite a while, and then I went to U.S. Steel Company as a boilermaker. And but in between time, what started me in music professionally during the time I was with Permanente Metals Corporation, all these movie stars would come up. They had what they'd call bond drive programs, you know, selling government, you know, savings bonds,
right.
You know, to kind of help buy the shells and stuff. And people like Charles Sterrett, you wouldn't remember him, and Lola Lane, you know, they're all movie stars,
right.
Victor Mature, and I could go on and on. But they would come up, and I formed a little group that we played behind them on these shows downtown, and we'd go to different defense plants and play and entertain them during their rest time or lunch time, and sell bonds, you know. So that, and then finally I started playing one night a week on the side there. And the first professional job I ever had was with a guy by the name of Elwin Cross, and he's still a DJ at KEAP Radio in Fresno, California. And shortly after that, I started my own group, but I still helped the job too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then I left there later and came back down to Fresno and organized a full-time band. We played various places like the Barn in Fresno and different places. And then I got tired of that. And music was off and on with me. I always used it as a secondary thing. And then I went to work for Peerless Pump Company, driving a truck and hauling pipe, irrigation pumps. And then, come in, Betty. And so then I came, after Fresno, I came to Bakersfield about, again, I came to Bakersfield again, and this was about the year of 45, right in there. And I still didn't play professionally all the time. I got a job running the shipping receiving department for Valley Office and played music on the side. Then after that, I left and went to Vegas, played over there a couple of years. I could go on and on, but let's talk about somebody else.
Oh, no, that's good. I want to hear everything you did. That brings us up to about the time when you took over the blackboard, and I'd just like to know some of your impressions of Kern County music, you know, some of the, maybe the big stars who came through, and maybe what you did at the blackboard to promote country music and some of the stars that you featured.
Well, Jana, before I think we covered this earlier, before I went to the blackboard, when I came back from Vegas, I played a place called Hank's Place, and later on they changed the name to the Clover Club. And then I played a short time at the Lucky Spot and then went to work for Governor Jimmy Davis. And I was gone about a year and came back. And then I went on the road with Tommy Duncan after he left Bob Wills. And while I was on tour with Tommy Duncan, the Blackboard called me, and they wanted a band leader. They had a band, but evidently they, they couldn't decide who's the leader and this and that. So then I turned in my notice in Seattle, Washington, and came down. This was 1950, and took over the band at the Blackboard.
Okay. Was the Blackboard Was the Blackboard the spot, the country western music spot in Bakersfield? And what were some of the other ones in outlying districts?
Well, at that time, way back there, the going spot was the Clover Club. And that's where I first met Bonnie. Mm-hmm. And Buck, they just come to town. And then the Lucky Spot was a real good spot, and the Blackboard. The Blackboard was a lot smaller. In fact, they enlarged it, I think, three times after I went there, and Buck and all the guys worked with me. And gradually, the Blackboard got to be the number one spot in the early 50s, and it's remained that way as far as nightclubs is concerned in Kern County. But right across from the Blackboard, there was a little place made out of a big boiler tank that was actually a nightclub across from the Blackboard, and they called it the Tank. So you wouldn't believe the spots at that time. They were, how would I compare it to other clubs, other towns, but they were, just really dumps, you know what I mean? And when I was on tour, I noticed a lot of the real hot clubs were just
really
more or less
bad.
Dumps, but it was the place that was doing all the business. But then the Blackboard emerged the nicest and the most popular club, and well, I would say anywhere between Los Angeles and Sacramento.
Mm-hmm. Who are some of the stars whose names most people would recognize who you had appearing at the Blackboard?
Golly, that'd take a long time because I hired a drummer that was with Bob Wills by the name of Johnny Caviello, and he was known as a Texas drummer boy. He recorded a song with Wills that was a big hit, a drum solo. And the first band at the Blackboard, I believe, was Billy Mize that I had with me. It was Billy Mize and Cliff Crawford. And I believe Jack Trent on piano. And incidentally, Jack played on the first records that Buck ever made on a little label called Pep. And of course, from time to time, the guys would come and go and would change. Then Buck came along and went to work with us. And I think he was with us like maybe 5 years. And it just happened like maybe Billy Mize would go somewhere and Buck would work, and Buck would take off on a couple of days or a month, and Billy Mize would work. But Buck was with me, I guess, like 5 years there. And
you actually started Buck singing, didn't you?
No. As far as singing, Buck started as a teenager over around Arizona, and he was more or less like me. He played, like gospel music and everything, and they had a little kids band over there, and I can't remember the name of it, but I think that Buck's professional singing started at the Blackboard because he never did like to sing. In fact, I hired him as a guitar picker, and I didn't know he sang at all, but finally, one night, we talked him into singing, and he sang at that time in a real low key. I think Hank Thompson or some of those guys were his idol. And But he had a real good voice, even in a low key. And we found out he could sing in a high key, and we kept raising his keys. And I think Buck's still mad at me for him being so hoarse so many nights walking off the bandstand. But we kept raising his keys, and he got to where he could sing tenor to Bill Monroe, you know.
Yeah, and he can really hit
their
high notes now, I know that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. 4 or 5 years ago, Buck, he always liked to pick guitar. He would sit in the background and play guitar unless you just got behind him and said, "Buck, get up there and sing a song." And when he did, well, the crowd just reacted to where that they all loved him. He got to where he could do a rock and roll song just as good as he could country. And in fact, the first recording contract he had was under two names. One name was Buck Owens, the other one was Corky Jones. And
was Corky Jones a rocker?
Yeah, he was the rocker on the same label. And he recorded, I think, Down on the Corner of Love in the country. And he recorded something about a hot dog stand or something as Corky Jones. And both of them were great. And at that time, during that time, you had to do about every kind of music. So he'd get up and do rock. He'd sing rock just as good as Little Richard or any of those guys. And he'd turn right around and do like the Wabash Cannonball or country, and just a great job, you know. And of course, we was there a long time at the Blackboard and worked hard 7 nights a week and 2 shifts on Sunday. And
Tommy.
Yeah. And so then of course we'll skip a little during this time we booked I remember one artist that got real big during this time, and Buck knew him over in Arizona, a guy that had his first hit out on Columbia, and we started booking guest stars every Tuesday and Wednesday night. And Buck said, "Well, this guy's a friend of mine, and I think we can get him over here." And I think among the first personal appearances that Marty Robbins ever made was at the Blackboard.
Hmm.
And I remember that he drove over from Phoenix to do the wow. personal appearance. And he was a lot like Buck. when he came over there, he'd get up and sing his songs because he had to, but he wouldn't get off the bandstand. After he'd get through doing his songs, he'd play the steel guitar a while, and he'd play the piano a while, and just make the rounds on the bandstand, you know, just love music. And that's a lot the way Buck was, because he'd play all the instruments, and in fact he'd rather play than sing at that time. And I guess now he's kind of glad that everybody wanted him to sing, because that's where he's made it big. That's about as far as I can go right now without some questions.
All right, what about some of these other places, in like Pumpkin Center and some of the outlying districts? Weren't there some large dance hall type things, and some of the big names actually, I guess, just played not as guest appearances or concerts, but for dances?
There was in the early 50s and the late 40s, well, way back there was the Rainbow Gardens.
Right.
And they had country music, well, they called it Western back then.
How many would let me go?
And they had, like the Munns brothers, Johnny Munns and Fiddlin' Red Huckabee, and there was a place down the street called the Rhythm Rancho, which was a little dance hall, and Odell Johnson was there. And then there was the Barn, which is the Moose Hall, Stockdale Moose Hall now. And then, but the most popular in the early days was, I'm saying the early 50s, was Beardsley Ballroom. It was out on Roberts Lane. It burnt down later. But they had like Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys and Johnny Lee Wills, T. Texas Tyler, and all the big stars of that day. That was one place that Merle was a kid then, and he said that he used to go out there and he didn't have the money to get in, and he'd stand up on his bicycle seat where he could see in the, they had a screen wall, you know, up so high. He'd stand on his bicycle seat and watch Bob Wills because he didn't have the dollar to get in. I didn't know Merle then, but I guess Bob Wills would have had a fit if he'd known Merle Haggard would be what he is today, or even Buck, you know, playing over the little club over there for a little nothing. And getting away back to Rainbow Gardens and places like that, before Beardsley Ballroom was so popular with Wills and all the big Western names, Maddox Brothers and Rose appeared at Rainbow Gardens, and then later they had a hall in Pumpkin Center called the Pumpkin Center Community Hall. And the Maddox Brothers and Rose and Ray Price and a bunch of them appeared there. At that time, Willie Nelson was fronting the band for Ray Price.
Is that right?
That was the way before Willie Nelson ever had a hit song or a hit record.
He is big right now. We just came back from his home country, you know, Texas, and everybody was talking about Willie.
Yeah, well, Willie, you know, made it real big several years ago, and then he went into Nashville and got lost in the shuffle for a lot of years, and he just sat back there for all these years and kept getting madder and madder, and so finally he just said to hell with it, and he went back to Texas, and he fought Nashville and won out because he went back to the 1940s music. In fact, the first big hit he had, Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain, we started doing that back in Las Vegas in the late 40s. You know, it's an old song. And
his following are the young kids, actually.
Yeah, that's right.
He's going back to the real old stuff, and he's getting all the young kids.
Yeah, he's playing the old, genuine, what they call Western music background. Mm-hmm. And seemed like that his following is the young kids and the hippies and the college kids and
right.
all like that, you know, I guess because they think he's a renegade or something, but he's got a lot of talent, fine songwriter.
Yes, he is, really.
And
I was just looking at some of these people you had told me were guest artists at the Blackboard, some of them like Lefty Frizzell, and of course you just mentioned Marty Robbins and Hank Thompson and George Jones and Rose Maddox and Tex Ritter. It goes on and on and on. Who are some others that you remember?
See, where were you there? Rose Maddox, Tex Ritter, Johnny Bond, Tommy Duncan, Merle Travis, Patsy Cline, Connie Smith, Johnny Horton did his first appearances in his career at the Blackboard with us. That was when Buck was with me. Jim Reeves, Bob Blumen, who was this?
Dale
Reeves, and Chester Smith,
Wade Ray,
and
Jimmy Dickens, little Jimmy Dickens,
and Rose. Did I say Rose Maddox?
Yeah, he did.
Rose made a lot of appearances there. Lefty Frizzell,
yeah.
Well, you just name anybody that was big in that area. You know that time. Between the 50s and the 60s and early 60s, and we had them. Anybody with any name at all, we booked them. Thank you. Dutch okay. Masters. Of course, well, we had the Canadian Sweethearts, and Buck had met some of the people over in Arizona when he was starting out over there, and he had heard of a lot of them, and so we got our heads together, and we decided.
Brought them all in.
Well, yeah, we decided who we wanted in next, and we had a big waiting list, you know.
Oh, that's great.
Well, you figure, Buck was with me about the first 5 years there, but over a period of 14 years at the Blackboard, we booked guest stars two nights a week for 14 years, so you figure out.
You had plenty.
And some of them we had, quite a few of them we had return engagements, but I guess we just booked about everybody in the business.
Right. What do you think of Bakersfield being called the Nashville West or Little Nashville?
Well, you mean, what do you mean, what do I think?
Well, do you think that's accurate? Do you think it is like a Nashville Western? Do you think it's because of Buck and Merle, probably primarily? I know it's not as big as Nashville, but Bakersfield isn't as big, but seems like maybe it's from Buck's success and now from Merle's success, too, that it's called that.
Well, yeah, I'll agree with you 100%. I don't know who started that, and I can't remember what year that they started calling Bakersfield a Nashville West or the Nashville of the West, but I'll just give you a few examples now. You take, well, we'll say Hollywood. There's like maybe 300 recording studios there. There's possibly a couple of hundred nightclubs that's going full force. There's, well, just anything in the music industry, you know, is probably 1,000 publishing companies. And then you take Portland, Oregon, for instance. You know, it's the West. There's like 30 nightclubs there, country nightclubs, with steady bands. And I can name a lot of places, even Phoenix and Las Vegas. Well, Bakersfield, there's no studios here outside of Buck's that I say, you know, that I would agree with, that could cut a quality master.
Mm-hmm.
And up until then, we had one little studio out here that was a pretty good dub studio, and then there's another little studio over here that's a pretty good dub studio, but we'll say that there's one recording studio here in Bakersfield, and of course it's comparable to anything anywhere, I think, you know, quality wise.
Right.
And so there you are, you know, one recording studio. Okay, there's probably 10 clubs that play weekend country music, and there's 3 clubs that go steady. So there's about 12 country musicians playing steady in clubs in Bakersfield, compared with hundreds in like Vegas, Hollywood, Phoenix, even over on the coast, there's quite a bit of action going on over there. So I would say that strictly, the name Nashville West came when Buck got so big. And, you know, Buck arrived to the number one spot about 8 years before Merle ever recorded, see.
Right.
And so...
And he kind of arrived at a hard time, didn't he?
Yeah.
Country music was
well,
sort of down and out.
At the time Buck came along, we was fighting rock music, Little Richard and Fats Domino. Of course, they're great in their field, you know. And, I guess there was, you couldn't give a country record away at this time. The blackboard was going, we was packing it 7 nights a week, but country records wasn't selling anywhere. Maybe 2 or 3 artists, maybe Eddie Arnold and, a couple of old timers, Tennessee Ernie, and some of them were selling a few records, but country music was dead. And, the time that Buck came along, he had a real refreshing, different voice. He had different material. He had collaborated with a guy by the name of Harlan Howard and came out with some real good, fresh material. And incidentally, the funny part about all that, during this time at, well, there was a Tally studio, and Fuzzy and Louis Tally was shopping around for material, and I remember one day Harlan Howard presented a lot of songs to Fuzzy Owens, and at that time they was trying to cut kind of a top 40, country top 40, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't want, he looked over these songs that Harlan Howard had and turned them all down. okay, like the blizzard, heartaches for the number, I could go on and on. He turned them down. I said, Fuzzy, you better think twice. Oh, well, they're good songs, but they're just not what's selling today. So Harlan and Buck got to be good friends, and they started collaborating on some songs, and Buck recorded some songs on a little label called Pep Records. And on a little unknown label, he started getting hot as a firecracker. You know, refreshing voice, refreshing material, and everything like that. And at this time, though, Buck was playing lead guitar for Tommy Collins and even some of the pop artists like Nat King Cole, you know. He's a good musician. And I know every time we'd go out at Capitol, Tommy Collins would say, Ken, talking to Ken Nelson, you ought to sign this boy. He's good, you know. And at this time, they wouldn't sign anybody, hardly. And then after Buck made a big dent with his little label, you know, he's fighting these big labels with a new artist on a small label, he's tearing them up on the radio, you know. These disc jockeys was playing the hell out of his record everywhere. So Columbia offered him a deal. They all came at once, see. Columbia offered him a deal, and then Capitol offered him a deal, and he took the Capitol deal, and you know the rest, you know.
Right.
He came along at the time that they had to have something different, and that's what clicked. And he started scattering the rock and roll music everywhere, you know. And then, of course, some of the other artists followed through, and then Merle came along, and it just all added up. They start Buck went to the Grand Ole Opry as a guitar player for Tommy Collins, and so it just, you know, when Buck started making appearances all over the world and everywhere, it just started focusing on Bakersfield, and then Merle came along, and you know, the two of them
that
together.
Really, yeah,
it just
because
really,
they've both been so big.
Yeah.
Well, it really, I think it does have something to do, though, with Bakersfield being, you know, it is such a country area. In the mid-30s, they had all the people, all the Okies, and people from Texas and people from Arizona who came out to seek their fortune, you know, in California. And Buck and Merle both have such similar backgrounds in that their families were completely destitute.
Yeah, that Buck was picking cotton in Casa Grande, Arizona, and Merle was picking grapes in California, so, you know, about
and
the same thing.
And they stuck to Bakersfield.
Yeah.
They didn't go to Nashville to earn their...
That's what I started to say a while ago. You got to hand it to those two guys, both of them. I remember Buck, when he first started getting hot, he was tearing everybody up in the business, you know, I mean, music-wise. And naturally, the first thing, Nashville started reaching her hand out and trying to bribe him and everything else to get him to go back there, you know. And so I know Buck told me one time, he said, you know, said Nashville is a big place and big music city, but said, you know, said if I went back there, I wouldn't be back there a month and I'd just be one of them. And I think he really used his head.
By
staying out here, and then when he went back there, they looked up to him, you know.
That's right.
And Merle did the same thing. They was after him to move back there, and I think that both of them really used their head by staying here. And then when they go to Nashville, you know, all those supposed to be big wheels, they meet you at the bus, you know.
That's right.
I noticed that.
They don't take you for granted.
That's right. After you're back there, you know, the minute an artist gets a foothold, they try to swallow them up.
Right.
They get them back there and promise them the moon, and when they get back there, they're just another little fish in a big pond, you know.
Right.
And I would say, getting back to the original question, I would say that really, Buck and Merle, first Buck and then Merle.
Mm-hmm.
I think it together that they're the only reason, really, that Bakersfield was even called the Nashville or the music capital of the West. And the reason, I think, is because the nation's, I mean, the world's two top country artists were Buck and Merle, and they lived here, you know.
Right.
So outside of that, Bakersfield is nothing musically, I'll tell you that right now. And
A lot of people are disappointed, too, when they come to seek their country music fortune in Bakersfield. And they
Like people call me, you know, and they'll get a record out or something. I'll say, man, don't come to Bakersfield if you're getting started and want to make a living here. I said, Merle and Buck works out of here, but they don't do the only stuff they do here is benefits. But they go back where the, you know, the big country like Detroit, North, South Carolina, do the appearances. But you can't tell those people that. You know, most of them think when they die, they want to go to Bakersfield, you know. And because Buck and Merle's here, but, you know, just because Buck and Merle is big, it's not that easy.
You almost have to be involved with their organization, either Buck or Merle, to feel any.
Yeah, you got to either, you know, we've even had several artists that when they get their first records out on major labels would move to Bakersfield, you know. Uh-huh. And they would stay for a while and then leave. But it's a rough place if a musician is thinking about making a living here unless he's already in. You know, unless you're a member of one of the steady bands here, and then that, you know, that's just a living, like mm-hmm. 200 a week, something like that. But if an artist wants to ever make it big, a record is the way to go, you know.
Yeah.
And then if you get big and want to move to Bakersfield, it's fine, you know.
Right.
But there's not everybody that can hit it like Buck and Merle, you know.
One thing we didn't cover, and maybe you could just tell me a little bit about the radio and TV scene. What were the very earliest radio, country radio stations? I know you had a big part in them, too.
Well, there was, before TV, there was radio, country radio, and way back in the 40s, the first radio show I remember hearing here was a 15-minute noontime program featuring strictly Bob Wills music on
KERO,
which later on was Channel 10,
mm-hmm.
which was one of the first TV stations here. And then later on, we see, I can name you a lot of DJs. I had a DJ show on
every station
yeah. over the period of years, every station in town except KLYD, and they're a newer station, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then, well, heck, I brought Ferlin Husky into town. I met him up Salinas when I was with Tommy Duncan, and I talked him into moving here and took him out and helped him sell a radio time, and he got a disc jockey show.
Hmm.
So then he did real well around these parts before he went and recorded for Capitol.
Yeah. That was on KBIS, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And you told me once that KPMC was kind of the pioneer of country music, you said, around here.
Western music back
early,
in the 30s.
Early 30s,
yeah.
And then KBIS is the one where you and Ferlin and Louie Talley and
Fuzzy Owens, Oscar Whittington.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a bunch of them. But we'd just follow each other. You know, we'd be on like maybe 30 minutes and we'd be talking, the other one take over, you know.
Right.
And then TV, there was a guy out of Tulare that started KEFY Radio, which I was a disc jockey on it when it was out in an old army barracks out on 24th Street. It was a pop station, but I did a 30-minute country show every morning.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy that owned that, TV was coming in, everybody was jumping for it. KPMC had the first choice because they were one of the first experimental TV stations in the United States. But when the TV grants came along, well, they turned it down. They didn't want it. So the guy that owned KAFY Radio started KBAK Channel 29. And at the same time, KERO got a grant for Channel 10.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not sure of the time difference, but KEFY...
It was awfully close, wasn't it?
Yeah. Channel 29 went on the air first. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe Jimmy Thomason had the first TV show.
Right.
And then shortly after, Cousin Herb got the second one on Channel 10.
And he was on a long time, wasn't
yeah.
he?
About 10 or 12 years.
Right. And what was his group called, Cousin Herb? And the
Trading Post. Trading Post Gang. And of course, we continued on booking at the Blackboard, and we would have a deal that the guest stars that appeared at the Blackboard would appear on Cousin Herb's TV show to plug the Blackboard, which worked out great, you know.
Right.
And then the Blackboard picked up the tab, you know. So it was real great. And there was several TV shows after that, like country shows. Jimmy had one. I had a TV show two different times.
Tony Fox?
Yeah, Tony had the latest one here. And then there was Billy Mize had a TV show at one time. Jelly Sanders had a TV show at one time.
Is that right?
Golly, I can't remember.
Several.
I can't remember the other. There's another guy had a TV show here for a while.
Then, of course, national TV. I mean, Hee Haw kind of brought a lot of fame to Bakersfield as well as Buck, too.
Oh, yeah. But then, of course, well, Jimmy Thomason had the last long-running TV show. I think he was on several years, I guess 4 or 5 years. And then Tony Fox had a show. It's on, his is on the cable, too, which didn't reach out too good, but it covered, the metropolitan part of Bakersfield, so forth and so on. But all in all, country music, really, I mean, speaking club-wise, TV show-wise, and everything is more or less gone to pot, really, here in Bakersfield. There's no daily TV show. And there's only 3 steady clubs. You know, it's
mm-hmm.
it's not it's making any headway.
It's the national scene more.
Yeah, that's right. Hee Haw, yeah. Hee Haw came in, and there's so many country shows. You can get, you know, like the Buck Owens Ranch Show, Hee Haw, and the Hank Todd. Well, you know, the
right.
ones coming out of Nashville. And the TV stations can buy them, you know, cheaper than they can hire a local band, and it's
right.
Has the big names on it, so.
Right.
There's your difference, you know.
Well, there are some stars, though, who live here. I mean, kind of propagated by Buck, but like Susan Ray and LaWanda Lindsay, who just moved. And quite a few, like Maeve Nutter. And doesn't Tom Brumley still live here?
Yeah, Tom still lives here.
I think maybe some of them got their start through Buck, and they just stayed.
Yeah, he brought a lot of the, you know, when he started the OMAC, corporation, he brought a lot of the big stars in here to live and to work out of here, like Freddie Hart. He's
right.
one of the biggest that I that comes to mind right now. And well, of course,
do Merle's people live here? They pretty much stay. I mean, live wherever they were when Merle started his band, don't they? And then they just go on tour with him.
Well, when Merle first started his band, it was local guys that had played in the clubs with him. And up until the last year, everybody that played for Merle lived here, except...
Tiny Moore.
They live everywhere, you know.
Uh-huh.
But his drummer and Roy Nichols and Lewis and Fuzzy, they live here. But they're scattered out a little bit now, you know. They do most of their personals back east. And so they just, when they get ready to go, they join up, you know,
right.
or record or whatever.
Well, I think we've about covered everything, and I really want to thank you. You certainly are an encyclopedia of knowledge about Bakersfield country music, that's for sure.
You sure your name's not Jackie Kennedy?
Don't I wish? Okay, thank you.